Blog Talk Radio.
When life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes. So write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast, episode number 301, and I'm broadcasting to you live out of Lexington, Kentucky tonight, and have a great show coming up for everybody. And joining me right now is my partner in crime, co-host, the one behind the hashtag Dark Style, the one, the only, Daniel Dark. Daniel, how's it going, my friend?
It is going wonderful today. Just been on Zooms and podcasts and everything else all day long. So just trying to get some stuff working a little bit more than what, you know, they have been. So, you know,
fantastic.
Plus get a little bit of writing done, get a, you know, a little bit of voiceover work done, different things like that.
Well, you've been playing with some FX on your Instagram channel, because I was peeking at a few of your latest posts, and you had some fancy filters or effects, a couple of those, so looking good. Crazy stuff, man. Well, I liked it. Looking good.
Did you like the alien bug?
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, you've been playing around, I see. Getting fancy, getting the bells and whistles going. That never hurts. But yeah, good stuff over there on Gentleman's Cigar on Instagram there. Yeah, to Daniel's account. Great stuff. And hello to Sandy Lender. Just joined the chat room, and chat room is open, folks. So if you don't access it right away, sometimes it's a little glitchy. Just refresh and just keep drawing a time or two to get in. If you want to join the chat, we always like to take comments and questions from there. And it's going to be a good show. Yeah, I've had a busy day too. Not as exciting as Zoom calls and then chats and stuff like that. And but yeah, it's absolutely wall to wall. One of my favorite bands, Dream Theater, released a video for my favorite song, Transcending Time, off the new Dream Theater album, A View from the Top of the World. And it's only like, about 6 or 7 minutes long. That's average Dream Theater song length. But I haven't even gotten a chance to even stop and watch that today. It's been that kind of day. But the good news is, Daniel, that we've been rolling on the Imaginarium front and got the first wave of guests posted. And great batch, the first wave. Got, of course, our guest of honor, Ellen Datlow, on there leading the charge. And then we have James Aquiloni, who we just announced, as a matter of fact, last week. And he is the managing editor for Weird Tales magazine. And there are a lot of folks in the sci-fi, fantasy, and horror world definitely know Weird Tales magazine. And he's got some tremendously successful Kickstarters and anthologies going on right now, just really doing some big stuff. And really bringing him out as an Imaginator guest. And of course, Anna Faktorovich, we announced, and Virginia Smith, and the other two Imaginators, and then a lot of great spotlighted guests. We announced Demetrius Witherspoon today, as a matter of fact, as a spotlighted guest. Of course, you know him on the show several times, the mastermind behind Submerged Universe. And Sandy Lender's on there as a spotlighted guest today. So, yeah, she's just getting back from Asphalt Industry Conference. So, yeah, definitely paving a path to the future there. So I'm glad to see Sandy back from Phoenix. It looks like she's staying in the chat room, and she's getting settled in tonight for the show. And but, yeah, the full guest page has gone up, and gotten a lot of traffic hitting now, a lot of traffic. But we're going to have a lot of updates posted regularly on that site. So, yeah, keep checking that guest list because it's going to grow quick. We've got a lot of guest applications. And, of course, everything else is open right now as far as Imagine Award nominations, film submissions. We still have Expo Space in both Main Expo Hall and Creative's Alley. Sponsorships and patron spots are open. So, yeah, take advantage of everything you can on Imaginarium because we are going to deliver the best one yet this July 8 to 10, and that's going to be it's going to be spectacular. And in terms of, you know, we're going to have this guest list is just awesome. I mean, lots of new faces from all around the country. I mean, it's going to be really, really good. So we're excited, and but definitely a lot of work. And then also I should also mention that, you know, we showed Carol Preflatish's new cover for Witch Hunt, the third Nathan Perry mystery, and that was awesome. But definitely got a great response on that. So that's part of the wave that's going on. And I got to show my new cover for Burning Skies, the sixth, number six. They're all standalones, but the sixth novella in the Ragnar Stormbringer Tales collection. So that got to get that shown. So, yeah, got a good wave of releases coming with Stephen Shrewsbury's Killer of Giants building up. And then we're going to have also some others coming up from other authors like Aaron Christopher Drown and John Pica and some others. So be on the lookout for that. And yeah, and then just working away, writing, editing, everything else. And I'm about like a hair away from finishing a novel, a second in the Faraway Saga. So for me, yeah, my writing sessions have been going pretty well, and about a day or two, probably 2 days away from finishing that as far as handing it off to the editor. I've been doing the polishing phase for a little bit after finishing the first draft of the manuscript. So it's a lot. So it's definitely a lot. So yes, Daniel, go ahead and fill folks in on how things have been going with the with everything as far as the trolley too, and what's going on with that. I got to do a quick check on a call that's in here, and I will be right back.
It'll be somebody that you know.
Okay. So this is who I know. Okay.
Yes, it is.
Want to make sure it wasn't our guest for the evening before I brought him, but this is a surprise to me actually. Let me make sure it is him for sure. I think it is. Yeah, because I know the area code of the guest, so I'm pretty sure it is. But yes, joining us tonight is a last minute game time decision, and Daniel informed me that we were going to have another co-host tonight, and I'm very excited to bring this co-host in because I've got to talk to him live in a while. I've worked with him, and then have the utmost respect for him, and I know he's got some pretty big stuff to talk about. Of course, he is the inspiration behind Lation Nation, and you know what that means. It's Matt Lation, the one, the only. Welcome to the Star Chamber Show. Matt, how's it going?
Hey, Steve. Good evening. Thanks for having me on. I'm really good, thanks. How about you?
Oh, doing real good, man. You're jet setting, having all kinds of adventures. And, Daniel told me today you were coming on the show. I was like, awesome. So we have a great guest co-host. And then Holly was like, hey, I can take off and do some editing. So that's kind of what
happened. You're welcome,
Holly. Yeah, she's listed somewhere there, but yeah, she's been buried in editing a book, so yeah, she's like, you and Matt and Daniel have it covered, so how are you doing, man?
Every now and then you've got to bring in your Ripper brothers to bail out and slash off the excess, so.
Yeah, no, well, you know, I ain't shy, so I'm happy to be on the show with you guys, co-host, and meet Tim here, of course. So, it's a pleasure to be here, guys. Good to be chatting with you again, Steve. Daniel, I know we've been talking quite a bit lately, so always good to, you know, be on the ringer with you guys.
Absolutely.
Well, it's always good to chat with you, Matt. You know, you've always got something in the fire just ready to do your brand wherever you need to place that brand at, so...
That's true.
Well, we're going to give you the floor here because I know that you've got you have posted publicly, so I know you can talk about it a little bit. So I'll let you handle what you can and can't say. Go for it.
So, I mean, obviously, since I've been on the show last, a lot has been happening. Bit of a mixed bag. Late September, Shannon, who you had on the show, passed away, which was very sad. She was a really good friend, and I miss her. But I was at a point where I was looking to leave the agency. In late December, I put in my 30 days notice to terminate my contract, and it just sort of seemed like the world was waiting for that, because December was quite eventful. I reached out to an agent that I had met and asked a couple of questions about my projects that I had and whether they will be still sellable, outside of that. And that turned into a conversation about signing with her. And I did announce that a couple of weeks ago. I signed with Amy Collins from Talcott Notch. She's a wonderful agent, great agency. So really looking forward to, keeping the current projects moving, but also working on some new stuff as well after about March or April. I will be continuing to complete a rewrite of Murder Between Realms. There was interest in it from a publishing house, so I'm still going to honor that and just basically go take it back to them via my new agent. But you're probably be interested in that, Steve. I'm basically converting the story from third person, the version that you and Daniel have read, to now it's now mm-hmm. first person North's voice or North's point of view.
Oh, my God. Well, that's a little bit of work.
I picked three chapters because I said that I want to make sure I feel good about it, and I picked three chapters all with a different sort of emotional stakes, and I read them back, and I thought, damn it, this is better. So I realized now I have to go through all of it. I'm into day four now, so I'm definitely over the hump, and it's sort of downhill from here. So, working on that for a little while now. But also in December, I was contacted from nowhere, from a production company that works for the History Channel. They produce a show called History's Greatest Mysteries. It's hosted by Lawrence Fishburne. And they told me that they were recording a Jack the Ripper episode, and they were interested in having me on the show. Just came completely out of nowhere. So when I asked them how they found me, they said that it was via just basically trying to, searching in different river forums and other things like that. And my name kept popping up. And I can only assume that was from the times when I was selling the book when it was in publication. But, hey, I don't care. if that's what got them, then that's great. But, no, there was a couple of Zoom screenings to make sure everything was all right. And last week, I flew out to LA for recording my part of the show. And
that's fantastic.
Incredibly excited. Thank you. Yeah, this is with Axford and the Ripper book about to go back out on submission to publishing houses. Also in about April, it'll be after the show airs more or less. My agent's gonna leverage the hell out of that, and it'll be included as part of my bio,
mm-hmm.
when pitching the story. So I've never been on TV before, so it was quite surreal doing the whole thing. I got to meet an old friend in Ripperology I'd never met before, which was good. Daniel knows Mike Hawley. We all did Rippercast mm-hmm. together. And he's just an amazing guy. Great company as well. Something that Daniel wouldn't know that came from the trip to LA. I wrapped up my part of my 2 hours 15 minutes early. And I heard the guy that Jeff, the guy that steers pretty much everything, he was yelling out to the producer, and one of the words he yelled out was Somerton. And I just said, are you doing a Somerton Man episode? And he nodded and said, yeah. And I just said, awesome. I said, because it's a case that needs more of a spotlight on it, because it's just so unique in the unsolved mystery world. So then he asked me about four or five questions about the Somerton Man case and asked for comment on it. And I just said, is the camera still rolling? And he nodded with a smile. And I said, so this could be on your Somerton Man episode? And he nodded again. So I may have got a two for the price of one deal here. I'm definitely going to be on the Ripper episode. Definitely going to be on the Ripper episode. But as luck would have it, I might have a two or three little things to say on the Somerton Man one, which would be amazing too, because the third book in the Axford series has the Somerton Man in it. So
that fantastic.
Was conceived two or three years ago. So yeah, no, 2022 is off to an electric start.
A roaring
start. I definitely want to ride this. Yeah. So now I bought a bottle of champagne and I made the New Year's resolution, because if people know me, they know that I usually celebrate a milestone, like finishing a draft or when I landed Shannon, signed with Shannon. I have a glass of champagne to celebrate, and I hadn't had a champagne moment in 2 years, and that just didn't sit well with me. So, I bought a bottle on New Year's Eve, and the New Year's resolution was empty the bottle, and I've already had two very big glasses of that thing, and well on my way. So hopefully, here's to an empty bottle by the end
fantastic.
Of the year.
And real quickly, because I'm going to have to get the sponsor spots in, and we'll get the guests, our guests for tonight on. But
of course,
it's probably way too early for you to even know this, but do they have a broadcast date for you on the History Channel show yet? We got to ask that in the chat room.
Of course, no. It's current estimate is March, April. I would probably say April. But
sometime
on
there.
My website.
Okay.
On my website, they're under contact, there is a sign up for a watch party. And whether you attend the watch party or not, I'll still give the details of when the show's airing. So people can have it queued up. And looking forward to that.
Fantastic, man. This is just so cool. So cool. And we're already getting requests to get you Maker's Mark. They want to get you a bottle of Maker's Mark, too. My bourbon people are speaking up.
Right. Unfortunately, I can't see the chat window, but hey, first time for everything.
Right. Oh, and quickly, can you give me your website? We got a question out of the chat room for your website.
Sure. It's Matt with two T's -Leyshon, LeyShon.com.
So Matt with two T's -LeyShon.com. Excellent.
And it's under the contact. People are welcome to check the rest of the site out, of course. But what I'll also do, Stephen, is on Facebook, in the Facebook group for the Star Chamber show, I'll put the link in there too.
Excellent. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, and I will definitely pass that around in our channels. And but tonight's show, we are running just a hair behind, and I did tell our guest that we had some big announcements for Matt going on right now, so our guest is waiting on deck.
I appreciate
and,
you making that time for me.
Oh, yes. No, it's great, and I'm thrilled that you're going to be hanging out with us tonight, and it's just a very welcome surprise. But we do actually have sponsors tonight, and I would be remiss if I don't acknowledge them and get their spots in here. But it's the great Sandy Lender and Ren Garcia, two absolutely fine authors, both really talented. And I'm gonna make sure I get the right spot for Sandy, because she had a special one last week. We had our 300th show, Matt. It was our we've over 8 years we've been running, and we had our episode 300 last week. So Sandy made a special spot for us. But this week we're going to be going back to her current new one. So I'm going to make sure I get the right spot here. Here we go. This is for Sandy Lender.
On that milestone, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Do vampires celebrate the same holidays as us? Author Sandy Lender says, of course they do. And up next is Valentine's Day. Welcome back to the Rose Chateau, where a nefarious businessman is threatening our favorite vampire and his fairy love interest. Get your copy of Sandy's new release, My Fairy Valentine, in print or ebook formats. You'll be guaranteed a humorful blend of sweet paranormal romance sprinkled with a touch of horror in Sandy Lender's latest novel, My Fairy Valentine.
Thank you, Sandy. And yeah, fine novel. It's really, really good. Yeah, humor, horror, paranormal elements, mystery. It's got everything. The genre blender, Sandy Lender. And now we're going to go over to a little spotlight for Ren Garcia. Here we go.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
Yes, Ren. We're definitely weird enough for you. Daniel considers himself normal enough for you, and I'm sure Matt is with one of us on that. But yeah, thank you, Ren. Thank you very much for the support. And if you know Ren, please bother him to come out to Imaginarium this summer. He needs to get down here from Columbus, Ohio, and see us, because it's been a while since I've seen that guy in person, and he is just awesome. But we're going to go ahead and, since we're running a couple minutes behind on our guest, I want to go ahead and bring our guest right in. And tonight is a really fun one for me, because I know a lot about our guest's new book, and it is a gem. He writes in the area of dark fantasy and paranormal fantasy, and he's got a great series that's just kicked off called Wilting Blood. And the first book is called Red Revival. He's also got another novel out called Urban Monarchs, and he is also big into the world of tabletop gaming, RPG gaming. So without further ado, it is my privilege and honor to bring onto the Star Chamber Show for the very first time the one and only Timothy Dempsey. Timothy, your microphone is on. Welcome to the show.
Hello, it's great to be here.
There he is.
Good to have you.
You're with a crazy bunch tonight. You got me, Matt Lation, as a surprise guest co-host tonight, and the one and only Daniel Dark. So, yeah, this is going to be a fun night, Timothy. So I hope you're
fantastic.
Ready.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Welcome to the fun, Timothy.
Thank you.
Yeah, Matt can tell you, you know, it's kind of like we, you know, once we get you in here, you know, it's like you always feel like you want to come back, just like Matt's proving tonight by being on the show.
Trying to keep me out.
But,
welcome.
No, it's going to be a fun night, and you've got a lot to talk about, because I've worked with you as an editor, and you have a really good novel that's brand new, called Red Revival, first book in your Wilting Blood series. And I want to give you a chance to tell folks a little about it, as far as the plot and what type of book it is, in your own words, and give us a little bit so that we can find out about you, and then we'll get into a little more discussion on everything else.
Okay, sounds good. So the first book, Red Revival, follows the story of a young man named Isaac Schwarzschild, and he lives in this country called Fallen Day. And Fallen Day is a weird place on a good day. It's very unstable most of the time. It's so unstable that it's actually been worked into their history that their government kind of collapses every 30 years. Fallen Day, because of this instability, there's this legend that there was these five demons and they caused people to fight. And this is just some background, because eventually people kind of split themselves into five groups. And this went on for a while. Instability, war, new governments and organizations rising to power, until 40 years before the story starts, when something happened and this woman named Asleah Wiere appeared. And she's a vampire. She's the first vampire. They're called Blutsauger in the book. And she began to spread vampirism like a plague around the nation. And essentially where we are now is the vampires have taken over the entire center of the country and have their own miniature nation called Laika inside of Fallen Day. And they want out. They want to conquer the rest of Fallen Day. They want to enslave everyone, turn people into food, cattle, or prospective glutes. And the only ones standing against them are the Gloot Hunters, which is this organization split into three different branches of people who can all use this. In the world, the only thing that can kill the vampires is the magic of the world. So every Gloot Hunter has enough magic to where they can hypothetically kill a Gloot. Not that they actually could, but just hypothetically that they would be able to. So Isaac is a gravity mage. He's an elemental. You can use gravity, but he can't actually project it, which means he can't actually make it. He can only manipulate what's around him, which, since he can't actually hit a Gloot with gravity, he can kill a Gloot. So he's waiting to do that. He's in this program where they basically use war orphans. There's a program where they just take war orphans and turn them into soldiers. And Isaac's in this program, and he's waiting to see if he's going to be picked as someone that's going to be taken on as an apprentice, which is a younger Gloot Hunter that is seen as valuable and to be trained up into an asset, or someone who's basically going to be sent to die on the front line. So he's waiting to see, and he has a pretty good idea of where he's going to go since he can't actually do anything. So when he has a chance encounter with a very high-ranking Gloot Hunter, he ends up being taken on as an apprentice to an underling of the high-rated Gloot Hunter he was encountered. And he gets sucked into the world of the Blutes and how horrible it actually is. And it turns out to be worse than everything he's heard if he has a close encounter very early in the story. And he kind of realizes that they're not just people with super strength. They're full-on monsters. And as the story continues, there's this where the Azwia, the head of vampire, she's thought to be dead by the Gloot Hunters. And the Blutes, who worship her as a goddess, they think that she left her physical body behind and she ascended somewhere to a higher plane. But what it turns out is that Azwia is trapped in her own head and she's slowly clawing her way out throughout the book. And as the book goes on, the first chapter is A, and then it continues to go on and spell her name out as she slowly pieces herself back together. And so by the end of the book, she's clawed her way back to sanity. And that's essentially a spoiler-free description of the book.
There you go. You definitely gave us more info than would normally be on the Amazon write-up, but without giving a whole lot of spoilers. that's good, man. It's a book that will appeal, I think, to YA audiences, dark fantasy, epic fantasy audiences even. I mean, it's got a real kind of cross subgenre appeal to it. And is that kind of the feel that you have, and was that intentional to make it kind of go in those directions, or kind of how did the story kind of develop?
Yeah, I was definitely – so there's actually kind of a funny story with that, is because I was trying to go for kind of a YA thing. Of course, there's going to be like horror elements and stuff like that. But it turns out, as I've been reading more, I think the book series I was using as a gauge for what was like normal in YA in terms of violence was just kind of one of the reasons that mine is also at that same level of when it comes to the action, especially with the vampires. But one of the things that I was doing was when I was reading these books, I was kind of getting frustrated with that same formula of the main characters being the main guy, the love interest, and then the best friend. So as you know, and I kind of set that up until that thing happens in the 15th chapter, and then the story takes a different turn.
Right. And there are some good twists and some that will shock readers. Like even myself, when I was reading through it for the first time, I was like, whoa, you know, and I got to that part you're talking about. But that's a good thing, because you don't want to be too predictable. But it's a, yeah, it's definitely a lot of stuff going on with it, and it's just now kind of getting underway as a release. And so what so where are things at with the release and feedback and all that kind of thing as far as the public goes?
So I'm just trying to further market it. Its release is February 11th, and I'm kind of just waiting for the day to come. Although there is the Dispatch Hunters show, which I'll get into later, like the podcast with the game system. Again, when we talk about that.
Yes, yes. And that's actually something that I know Matt could talk about maybe a little bit too with his adventures in world building as well. Matt could jump in on this conversation, but yeah, you've done a lot of world building and you've even got a map in the first book. So I give you, it took me to my third title in my Epic Fantasy series to finally put a map in there. So you're even way ahead of where I was, but yeah, you've got a map and good stuff, man. But yeah, tell us a little bit about the world building aspect.
Going into the map thing, I wasn't going to put it in the book, but I considered trying to, for my own sanity, draw one for the first book, Urban Monarchs, which is a cyberpunk, and it was in a mega city. And then it hit me that if I drew this, I'd lose my mind because it'd just be too large. And I'm like, yeah, I'm just not gonna do that. So when it comes to the world building of Wilting Blood, I've been working on this since I was in seventh grade. It kind of just started in my head, not really this specific part of the world, but as things kept going on and I kept being introduced to new types of media and stories, they kind of like pieces would incorporate themselves in, and then they'd be changed to fit the world. The biggest thing, I think the most complicated thing with the world building is the magic system, which is it's split into four parts. Elemental, which allows you to control and create a specific element, and it doesn't just do fire, water, earth, air. It could also be like gravity, glass, metal. And then there's a color magic, where a specific color, you can use that color to do one specific thing. And you just essentially, like, if you have that, you have to just get really good at doing that one thing or find new ways to do that one thing. And then an artifact is you use items to cause effects to happen, and symbols is the same thing, but symbol magic can only be used by this separate species called Undlings, which are essentially look like elves but come from somewhere underground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a really interesting, yet it's exploring the magic system that you have, the kind of world setting that you have, the creatures that you have. And Matt, feel free to dive in here, because you've done some very good world building yourself, if you wanted to throw a question out at this juncture, because this is definitely a core element of Timothy's book is the world building side.
Oh, absolutely. Nice.
So
no, I appreciate what you said, by the way. But no, I guess when I first did it, because prior to writing mine, my first fantasy, I wrote about worlds that were already pre-built, and I just had to more or less build out concepts. Whereas I learned with fantasy, the challenges of world building, especially if it's a new world entirely, you know, you are literally building this from the ground up. And, you know, I had to think of things like system of government, you know, utilities, deities, and I wanted to try and plan and map out as much of that as I could before I started writing. I guess two questions. One is, did you do that? Did you build and conceive most of the world, if not all of it, before you started, or enough, at least like a backbone to get going, and then as time went on, you fleshed it out a little more? So I'll start with that question there.
Yes, there was a very strong backbone before I started writing. There was so one of the things is the Fallen Day is split into five different sections of land called cantons, and because of its history, there was this, what according to them, what happened is there are these demons that called people all across the world there. So Fallen Dayans don't really have like a specific appearance. So eventually, in order to better organize themselves, they all tattooed these colors under their eyes, little rectangles. So I had the idea of the canton marks, in my head, and I had the idea of, like, the guy who was, like, essentially the dictator. Like, I knew him as a character. But when I started writing the book, a lot more of the small stuff, like, what is the main, like, there's a city, the main city is called Rose Run. And it was like, okay, so what kind of place is this? What does it look like? Why is it shaped in this way? How is it unique? Because it's, you know, supposed to be the big capital. So what makes it fantastical, but also not like too unbelievable? And a lot of the smaller scale world building kind of happened as I was writing, and I just have ideas, and I'm like, oh, that's really cool.
Sorry, do you have a map for your story?
A map?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a map. I didn't have the map before I started writing. I actually had a really weird idea originally, which was that the country would look like a star, and each of the arms of the star would be a different area, and then there'd be a circle, kind of like a pentacle, in the middle, and those would be neutral areas. But then I'm like, okay, there's no way a country like that would ever naturally form. So eventually I just kept drawing shapes until I'm like, this shape looks good. And then I split it up and filled it in.
What do you use for your maps?
I commissioned the one in the book, but usually when I draw maps, I use notebooks. I do that a lot for when I'm doing stuff for games. So there's a prototype map of the map in the book, which is one I drew up. That my handwriting is illegible.
No, yeah, better man than I use an app for my maps. But now the other question I had was, of the elements in the world that you're building, apart from the shape, were there any other aspects of it that you found a challenge to sort of fit in with the plot and the story that you were putting together?
Yeah, so one of the in terms of fantasy, I think one of the weirder aspects of this world is that magic isn't ambient. It's something that comes specifically from sapient races, like their souls. So there's no, like, when it comes to animals, I just had to get weird instead of thinking about magic. So there's just like there's two good examples in the book of just weird animals, and the one is there's these wolves that, for whatever reason, they evolved to hunt in trees. So they have these multi-jointed limbs and really thick claws they used to climb around and launch themselves in. And then there was another one called a mucus toad, where the toad, you know those toads where they have the holes in the back, in their back, and their babies come out?
Yeah, actually, so I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So this has a similar setup, except instead of the children of the toad, it just makes this giant bubble of sweet-smelling mucus, and it releases it into the air. And then it lives in a swamp, and when the bubble gets too heavy with bugs, it comes back down, and the toad eats the bugs off. So those are the two of the weirder animals I came up with. There's another one that's talked about, which is a dire bear, which is just a bear but more. So that's not really that fantastic, but I just thought it was really scary.
Nice.
Creatures are awesome. Yeah, they are. Yeah, you had a lot of fun with that, and you'd have another pretty interesting one there, which I won't, of course, give spoilers. But you had another one at the end of the book that was very, very intriguing as well. But
yeah,
of course,
a lot of fun with those right now. Planning out for the second one.
Yeah, that tilts to book two, of course, but people have to read your first book to find out what I am talking about. But
yes.
I'm like Matt. It's like I was just chatting in the chat room about this, but I had hand drawn my maps, and they're absolutely atrocious in terms of art. I had to actually get somebody else to commission somebody to do one for that third book I told you about earlier. And but I've always had maps of just hand drawn notebook style, but boy, it's pretty rough artwork.
I really like the maps I make, but I'm also like, I can never use these professionally because these are not in English.
Right.
Scratch writing, and then like my tree is a line with a dot underneath it.
Yeah, feel your pain.
Yeah.
And go ahead, Matt.
very quickly, I took the guesswork out of all of it. I use an app called WonderDraft, and it makes me look like a very good map drawer, but in reality, no, it's more the magic of the app and its ease of use that allows for, you know, nice, for effective map production.
That's the good thing about being an author in the modern day, is that we do have apps, and then we have an easier time of finding artists that specialize in maps to commission than, say, there was, you know, even 20 years ago, which is definitely good in cases of people like me that are not very skilled with drawing. But I was going to say one thing I did catch when you were talking, Timothy, for a minute about your world building that is kind of important, to emphasize for the show for writers that are listening, is that you said when you initially you want to have this real kind of exotic land shape as like a star, and then you kind of sat back and thought, oh, yeah, wouldn't that necessarily in your typical your world typically naturally form that way? And that's something that I think is important, is to, you know, you have to keep in mind a certain realism with geology and climate and things like that. So you have to kind of factor those kind of things into the design of your world and the way the lands work in terms of terrain and geography. And that's a really good point, as far as like how things naturally evolve, where, certain types of terrain would be located and types of weather that would, be here or there. So it's good that you mentioned that, because that's a part of the process for sure. And it sounds like, that's some of the thinking that you put into it.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the first things I did after writing a few chapters, was be like, okay, I got to get a good idea of what this place looks like and not have it be a star.
Right. Like Clayton says in the chat room, you never want to lose your readers in place, much less time, regarding maps. Yeah, that's a good point. If I could have gone back, I would have made sure that my big map got in book one. I just hadn't found somebody good enough to commission yet, I guess. But yeah, it's very important, to have the map in the development there. But Daniel, did you have anything on writing craft or anything you want to dive in on? I want to make sure you get this convo too.
I had a couple of questions for him actually, but the first one, you're talking about the maps and everything. Did you make the map prior to making the story, or make the story prior to making the map?
It was written, and by the time that it was pretty early. I was below 10 chapters, and by this point, we've already seen a perspective of someone somewhere else in the book, like somewhere away from the main hub. And I'm like, okay, now I really have to figure out where everything is in relation to one another. So that's when I started making the map designs. And the first thing I did was I put on the big cities, and I'm like, I'll figure everything else out later, because this is where it's going to be for like the next like few chapters at least, like in terms of name drops.
And how many times did you have to go back and look at your map to figure out which place the story was being taken, was going to next?
A lot more towards the end, because towards the end of the book, there is a part where they move from one location to another, like the main cast. And I had to keep checking during the there's like a three chapters where it's the journey and the events that happen that are important to the story during it. And during that, I'm like, I really need to make sure I'm describing the right landscapes and kind of scenery, or it will just look really stupid, because I have a map in the front of the book, and I'll be like, oh, they walked over this flat plain, but like they'd be walking through hills in the book, or that it would be hills on the map. So I had to be very careful during that part of the story.
So as part of the part of your book, that'll like the trip to Mordor.
It's not as dramatic as that. It's a large amount of people moving for a military action, and it's much shorter. It's kind of moving from the the north from north to south in a straight line. But the bigger change is that as you go down in a straight line from the main area of the book, it goes from kind of a hilly flatlands to just a complete mess of a swamp. So eventually they just started having to deal with going through the swamp.
You were talking about vampires earlier.
Yes.
What form do your vampires take?
So the Blutes look like people, but there's a few noticeable differences. But the two biggest are all of their teeth are sharpened, and they don't have black pupils. They're bright orange, like embers constantly burning. As the Blutes have three categories that they fall into. And they're usually paler. The first category is called a commoner, and they are your average Blute. They're the ones you're most likely to run into. They're super dangerous because they're basically a person that doesn't have the limiters on their body that the brain puts on. And of course, they want to drink your blood. But once a Blute drinks enough blood, they progress to a knight. And a knight is much faster and stronger than a commoner, and they have the ability to use one artifact for artifact magic, and Blute artifacts are very strange. So it's not something you can really plan against. It's not like your basic this crossbow shoots an energy bolt like most of the Blute hunters have. It's something like the one character's artifact is his blood just turns into fire. And past that, they turn into nobles. And the nobles are the top of the Blutsauger society. They've drank the most blood. And they have the artifacts. They're stronger and faster than knights. And they can transform 50% of their body. And it's not even. It's not just the top or bottom. It's random parts of the body that eventually equate out to 50% into an animalistic hybrid form, which makes them stronger, even stronger and faster. Of course, there's Aslia, who, even compared to a Blute, like if a Blute looks like a monstrous person, Aslia looks like a monster desperately trying to look like a person. Like, she looks wrong in many different ways.
Yeah, great antagonist, and one that I think readers are going to absolutely love, as far as Aslia. One thing I want to introduce into the conversation here, Tim, is that when I first read it, and you remember this when I brought it up to you, I was working through it, and I said, so this really has a feel of something that could translate well to RPG gaming or tabletop gaming. And I remember you laughing when I brought that up, and you're talking about, yes, absolutely. And you're talking about a little bit about the relation to, your love of gaming, RPG gaming, tabletop gaming, and how, it kind of relates to how, you kind of envision, things of this world, and possibly even, I remember us talking briefly about you, wanting to maybe turn it into a game too. But talk about the bridge between this book and series and gaming, and how turning it into a game, or in reverse, how your gaming helped you write the series. Yeah, talk about those two things. I think that'd be interesting.
So in terms of how the games, I'm going to start with how the games helped me write the series. So I feel like that'll be a better transition point into the other topic.
Sure.
I wouldn't have been able to write this without playing and writing like 4 to 3 D&D campaigns that I have throughout my college experience, because there's something about having to do all that world building and keep everything consistent while there's these four dudes that will call you out if you get something wrong about your own world that made me just super, super vigilant about things. And it taught me a lot about story structure and how to pace things. And I learned a lot more. So in my first book, there was a pacing issue, and I'll be the first one to admit that. And when I was talking to one of my beta readers, who was a player of mine, he said that if you want to do this better, you should think about the pacing like you do when you're DMing. So I did that for this book, and one of the bonuses of a book is, unlike in a game where you might know what the villain's doing, in the book you can actually move perspectives and show the reader what the villain's doing. So you're able to develop those characters more. And especially when it comes to just getting any kind of basic design for a map, I wouldn't have been able to do, I literally would not have been able to do that if I hadn't been drawing maps already for these games to help me and my players see where we are and what's around us. If I didn't have those skills, I would not have been able to make the map. And
cool.
For the transition to a game,
yes,
or vice versa.
Yeah,
since that's such a big part of my free time and probably my most time consuming hobby. The year before, I got the first draft done, so I was just probably around like chapter 13. I decided that I was going to try and make a D&D podcast. It's called Dice and Effect. And the campaign, it ran for quite a bit. It ran for a year. The forced scheduling conflict kind of caused it to fall apart. So fun fact about that is the technical ending, the canonical ending for that campaign is we went to a wedding and exploded. But that's not important. The reason I set this up was to have a pedestal to stand on for when I released the book. But I knew to release the book, I had to use a different system entirely, so I started trying to make something that worked. So I have a very early draft of a system that works in the setting of Wolfing Blood, and I tested it a few times while I was over the past fall, and it worked well enough. And then I did I refined it more, and then I started the Dispatch Hunters, which the final episode will release tomorrow, which is a small 4-episode series taking part in the southern area Purple Shine of Fallen Day, and has an unrelated storyline to the storyline of the main books. And because of the way it went, which is that only one of my players ever showed up for the first and second session, and because it's 4 episodes, point anyone joining it would be too lost to catch up. We just kept me and him, but he was also one of the best role players in our group. So we got super into it. And it's a really entertaining time. We had a good time with it. But one of the things that I got to say definitely went well is the magic system did translate over. The way I put it in was the characters are made using point buy. Like you have a certain amount of points and then some rules about how you can distribute them. But basically you build your own character at level 1, pick your type of magic and then your subtype. And then you're given a -2 and a -3 ability. And they're different depending on what you're doing in terms of magic. And classes are just strength, dex, and balance. And a balanced character gets a point in the magic pool. And normally characters aren't able to get a point in the magic pool until they level up to 2. So the way that works is 1 point in the stat equals 1 point, 2 points in the pool. So normal characters will start off with 10, and then a balance will start off with 12. So that worked pretty well. My friend was playing a character named Midas, and he's an elemental using metal. And the NPC he was traveling with was a guy named Nikon, who used vomit green magic, which just makes people sick. And I only picked that because I thought it was really an interesting kind of power to use. And I was 100% convinced that no one would ever pick it because it's such a disgusting color.
Yeah. Oh man. But I mean, that is really to me fascinating. You actually get to play in your world, game wise, while you're writing the series. I mean, that's not something everybody I think every writer gets to experience. So that's definitely
cool,
awesome.
Though.
That you. But yeah.
It was a good time.
Interesting.
Hold on. An interesting thing is, Steven, you know how you told me your favorite character when you read it, Captain Jehenno?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So my player has not read this book, and he, for some reason, just attached to that character and kept talking about him. He doesn't even appear in the podcast, so that was, I found interesting.
That's it. That is interesting. That's awesome. But go ahead, Matt. You had something you were going to bring in?
No, just a quick question for you. You mentioned that this is an intended series. I think you said 3 that you're going to have. How far ahead or how invested are you in the other two already? Have you plotted out the series or, again, backbone, or how much are you ahead on what you're planning for this thing?
Do you mean the book series or the episode series?
The book series.
Okay, so I'm planning out for 4 books for the book series, and I have and it's going to change a lot as I write it. I have an idea for book 2. I've gotten the prologue for that done, so it's technically starting. But the main things I have for the plot is I do have the ending planned out, picked out already. The main things I have is I want each book to represent a different time of day. So in this first book, a lot of the most important stuff happens at sunset because it's representing how things are getting really dire. And this next book's at night, and then, you know, sunrise and day finally at the last one. And I do think I have the names figured out, though.
Okay. Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Thank you. That is. And, you've got such clarity with your world building, and the world's got such a rich history that you've developed and set up, and even you get a sense of that in the first book for sure. You have actually could do just about anything. Once you complete your initial trilogy, you could do spinoffs, you could do other trilogies set in this world. It, from my perspective at least, you know, the possibilities are about endless.
I've got one spinoff that I want to do, and I can't predict if this is going to happen or not, because obviously that's so far in the future, and I don't know what's going to happen as the other books are written out. But there's a character in this series, and she's named Valonia, and she has an interesting kind of story for herself going on. Don't know if as the book series go on, we focus more on the Blutes and the fight against Aswea, if she's going to get enough time to, like, thoroughly explore that in the main series. So I'm thinking I'm going to have to write, like, a small little thing once it's done, like, further explain her and her perspective on things and adventures.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, you've got lots of possibilities here with this, and but before we get too deep into the episode here, I do want to give you a chance to bring up your other works, as far as what came before your Blood series, and also are there other projects outside of this world that you're actively either writing or planning to write? So tell us a little bit about your other works and anything that's outside of this world that you're looking at doing.
So like my first novel was Urban Monarchs, which I don't know why I started with the genre I did, because I'm much more comfortable with fantasy, but I wrote a cyberpunk about these aliens in this mega city, and the city is controlled by different gangs at different times, and it's following the top gang as it's starting to lose power and the fight against their rivals. I think definitely the strongest part of the book is the interactions between the main cast and I had a fun time writing the villains in that one because I had no concept. Because it was my first book, I wrote the first chapter, was really happy with it, and then realized there wasn't a plot. So unlike with Red Revival, where I actually had a really strong idea of what I was doing in the story and kind of filled in the gaps they went on, in Urban Monarchs, I had no idea what I was doing the entire time. And there's parts of it which show that, but except the way I made the antagonist, I actually came up with a pretty good idea for them, despite them being something that came out of complete nowhere. I think they turned out pretty okay. And as for outside of this, the world of McKeed, I'm currently running a D&D campaign, which isn't really anything I can put out right now. But the way I'm running it is I had this idea for a setting, and I'm trying to see if I use this campaign over a few years to develop this setting, if I could later use it to write books. And obviously it wouldn't be like a D&D setting. I change a lot, but I'm talking about like the countries and stuff. And the idea is like the basic plot, not like the mechanics and spells.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like the storytelling factors. That's cool. Yeah, actually using the gaming to brainstorm plot that's and setting and all that. That's awesome. And yeah, because that's something that I've seen value in, because I've, like I said, after a 30-year hiatus, I started doing a little D&D myself the past year or two, and really enjoyed it, getting back into it, and then coming into it at this point in my career as a writer and then editor and book person. I can definitely see the great value that gaming can have for a lot of areas of writing. So it's interesting to talk to a person such as yourself that really engages that and makes it work. And because I'd love to play in your world that's in the Wilting Blood series. That'd be absolutely fun. So yeah, definitely release that game. Was that
a little practice?
Sorry.
I'll keep you up to date on how this stuff goes. The PDF right now is not something I can think about even releasing, because a lot of it's written so
right.
that I understand what I'm talking about.
Gotcha.
yeah,
I think Matt was getting in something there too. What you got there, Matt?
Oh, just weighing in on the gaming part. I'm not so much a video gamer, but a game that I've had for nearly 30 years. Probably my favorite board game is Talisman from the Games Workshop. And that definitely served for some inspiration for Murder Between Realms. So mm-hmm. I definitely drew some visuals from playing that board game a lot, and pretty much knowing every card and every space on the board. So, I can see the value in it. To be able to use a video gaming for that sort of thing, that's just unbelievable to me, because I know I can't use that for the type of fantasy that I write, but I to be able to use it to enhance your story or help plan out your stories, I think that's great.
Thank you,
Beth.
I have to check out more stuff from Games Workshop. I'm kind of my group is kind of stuck in D&D. I guess the one game, so we're trying to figure out how to move outwards with others.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see a lot, though, coming. I mean, you could take yours probably, Timothy, and collectible card game directions. You could do tabletop RPG games. You could take it to video gaming. Yeah, you could. You have a lot of possibilities in this one, because it really has. Yeah, how does that feel? It really, when you read it.
I already spent way too much money on collectible card games in my life.
Well, see if it gets popular, and you can recoup all that money if you release a popular game. You can get it back.
It's an Ouroboros. I spent money on cards, and then I made cards to gain money.
That's awesome. So tell us a little bit about your path as a writer. A lot of folks like to hear the backgrounds. Like, did you have a formal writing education background, or did you kind of just get in writing on your own? What was your path in becoming a writer to begin with like?
So I think the first really notable thing on my path to becoming a writer was when I started coming up with the much more immature versions of this, the world of McKeeb, which is where Wilting Blood is set. And as that went on, and I kind of got like ideas of characters and stuff and how to write characters, I ended up being we're skipping ahead like 6 years. I was a senior in high school, and I was in a creative writing class. And my teacher kept talking about how everything has to have a purpose. Like, everything in writing has a deeper meaning. And I was like, that's completely not true, because anyone could just sit down and write about someone running with a kite, and it would just be a story about someone running with a kite. So this is when I made this horrible play, because we had to write a play called the Heat Meat Machine, and I just wrote the entire thing to make whoever's reading it really uncomfortable but not know why. And what I did was, there was one character who didn't move. He just stared angrily and hatefully at the audience the entire time. And the other two characters was this guy who never stopped moving, and this woman who would just gaslight the other guy constantly. Like, she'd say something, and he'd be like, oh, you mean your brother? And she'd be like, what are you talking about? I don't have a brother. Where did you get the idea of that from? So that was kind of my first real, like, writing anything substantial moment. And after that, I kind of started writing some short stories on my
because we had like a lab, our school gave us like a little laptop so we can use when we were at school. So I would write stuff in Google Docs and send them to myself, very grammatically incorrect little stories. But as this went on, I come into college, and first year goes by, nothing really happens. But the second year, I'm in a creative writing class, and I have the idea of there's two characters in the Wilting Blood series I have a really good idea of. They haven't really changed from their early incarnation to their incarnation in the book, and the one's a woman named Melicana, and this other guy is named Agape. And it was those two characters interacting, and that was one of the stories I wrote for the different creative writing class in college, and that one was much more fun, and I had a good time, and I got a good review for that, and they were like, oh, this seems like the start of a book, and I'm like, oh, it's not, I was just doing this for fun, and they're like, oh, but you should probably try to write more if you're really interested in writing a book. So that's where the seed came into my head. So about half a year goes by, and it's the fall, and I wanted to start trying to build some credibility as a writer, so I started writing this little short story called Glory B, and you can find this on literaryheist.com, and it's a story about a detective and a priest, and the detective's interviewing the priest because there's been murders in the town. And in the story, the priest just announces to the detective, oh, yeah, it was me. And he goes on this unhinged rant to the detective about how he's gotten visions from God that he has to go to hell and kill the devil, because if he does that, he'll solve, he'll solve the issue of sin. But since the task is so virtuous, one murder isn't enough to send him to hell. So he has to commit, I think it's like 12 murders. It's like one for each different age group, and they're calling it the Noah's Ark murderer. And that got into a magazine called Literary Heist online. And after that, so usually when I would write up till this point, I would write something and I'd burn out for 3 months. And it'll just be like a 5-page story or something, and I'd just be done. But this time I didn't stop. It was a week went by, and I was still in my room, and I was playing with the ideas of what would become Urban Monarchs in my head. And I'm like, I think I can write the opening scene of this. And then I just never stopped. And then I was able to finish and publish the story. And then I got feedback on the story, and I realized where I screwed up or did something right and what I can do. And that's when I started looking towards Wilting Blood, which was found its like original seed in that story where Gaffe and Melicana were talking to each other. So I had some ideas of what the location looked like and these two characters, and I'm like, okay, I now got to figure out more about the main character, because at this point Isaac existed in my head, but he was just kind of a character that existed. I knew he was supposed to be the main character, but I didn't know enough about him. So that's like a good from there to here of where I am as a writer. And now I'm starting to write Heritage's Curse, which is the sequel to Wilting Blood Red Revival. It's a Wilting Blood Heritage's Curse.
Very cool. Very cool, man. And yeah, that gives us good image about the path you took. And it sounds like you've had some formal creative writing classes, and some positive encouragement along the way has helped boost you and kind of nudge you to take some steps. And that's good to hear. That kind of happened along your way, yeah, for sure. And Daniel, you've been quiet, sir.
I've been listening, taking notes.
Taking notes.
What you can learn from these new authors nowadays, it is amazing what they're doing now. Just on the fact of the world building alone, and knowing that he needed a map to keep up with everything, and why not include that map in the book? That's a tremendous feat right there as a brand new author, to understand that's things that you need. I work in the world of the known and the unknown. In other words, where I work with serial killers and different things like that, but they're all worlds that have already been built by some other author or in real life. And, you know, so I don't have to worry as much about building a world as I do about keeping my constraints to the world that's already built. And, you know, that's a different. What did you find different on building a world compared to using a world that was already had its own constraints, like your D&D world?
Yeah, I think the hardest part is the limits on things, because in D&D there's a very strict, and it, you know, like that game's been around for 50 years, so there's a ton of material on everything. So if you look and you're like, okay, here's what a god looks like if you write it down on stats, because there was a dip in the 90s or something that did this, right? So you have a really good idea of what the top of that world looks like. But when it comes to your own, and it's just this mental image, and you're like, I don't know how I'm going to stress this. Like, how am I going to make sure the audience understands what, like, that this, like, I'm going to use Johanna, because I mentioned him earlier just by name, so I'm just going to use the name again. So he's a captain, so he's one of the top three dogs, like one of the biggest, strongest blute hunters. And like, how do I make sure that the audience can see that this guy isn't just like name, like he's a character that has weight behind him? Like, how can I see that he pulls his weight, like how, like, that he can fight these noble vampires where other people can't? And how can I make sure that these fights against noble vampires don't devolve into like craziness? And then, like, how do I make sure that every fight with vampires of this rank feels like this type of difficulty, or characters of this level of energy or power stay at that level of difficulty? And there's a huge thing is in my story, the characters don't worship. They worship their ancestors because they had bad experiences with transcendental entities. So fallen beings don't really like to deal with anything that's not already them. But then it's really, I'm leaving it up out in the open if there is a paranormal world outside of physical one that the characters are in, and obviously the vampires, because I don't actually know yet. I don't know if I want to make that something that can affect the story. Like, is that house actually haunted, or is the shutter just creaking? I'm not sure even now.
Okay. That's sort of understandable on where you're wanting to take the story, where the story's wanting to take you. I don't know whether your characters sit there and tell you what they're doing, or whether you try to force your will upon them. But sometimes they just say, "I'm going over here. I'm going over here. Are you coming with me?" Type, you know. And
yeah.
You know.
I just remind my characters that I'm in charge. I'm like, you know what, you're going to go through some hard shit right now, and that's my fault, but I'm owning it. Enjoy.
I feel both of those, because there's some times when I just did some terrible things in my characters, and I'm like, sorry. But there's other times when I've sat down to write chapters that I've had really good ideas about, and then I finished writing, and something completely different happened. I'm sitting there, I'm like, I don't know how I got here, but it just happened, and now I have to live with this.
Yeah, it's like one of the calls that I was on earlier, or Zoom meetings that I was on, guy was sitting there saying, talking about me, you know, he can't really get the split personality in between who I am and who I am. And I said, I sent him a message back. Well, you know, we had a meeting. And it's not a split personality, it's a dueling personality. like with dueling pistols and stuff, you know, who's got the, you know, the sharpest sword, the correct aim, different things like that when it comes down to
direct conflict.
Who's going to win?
Sometimes when I'm writing, it's something completely different. I can't even think of an example because now the way the story is solidified in my head. So, but like sometimes when I'm writing and I'm like, oh, this character is going to do this and this is how it will affect the story. And then I write it and it's just something completely different happens and something either has like a huge ramification or it doesn't. Sometimes I'm like, I have to resist this urge because as great as this will be for this chapter, it will ruin everything after it. Or sometimes it's just like, okay, no, that's much better than I thought it was going to. Like, I thought, like, that's much better than my original plan, so I have to go this way now, and whatever happens, happens.
Like Doc Brown says, the timeline skewed.
That's true. That's a good one, Matt. I like that. Oh, man. So just to kind of bring back just the release date, you said February the 11th. Is when
February
it's 11th. Coming out. Okay.
You can already just in time for the ebook on Amazon.
Excellent. So just in time for Valentine's Day. Nice.
Yeah, not a fitting story at all, but yes.
Very nice. So what's planned as far as once you get this on the ground and going, are you going to be I know the whole pandemic thing factors into this a little bit, but what do you got as far as promotional appearances or books, you know, book signings or conventions? Do you have anything in that area lined up, or what are you going to be doing to get the word out?
I'm not entirely sure. I run a few social media pages, but I'm still – marketing's definitely been my biggest learning curve for this. I've improved a lot since Urban Monarchs because, you know, I actually have a book published. And so when I say I'm going to make another one, people, it's not just like a hypothetical product. But, I'm not entirely sure yet what's going to happen, but I'm going to be trying to spread the word about this as much as I can.
A little word out for you. Our buddy Pete Catania, who's just recently on for Why Not Wichita, he was on the show, and a great guy, by the way. He's going to be coming to Imaginarium, too. But he had mentioned that, he just found out through our announcements for this show tonight about your new book coming out. So hopefully we've helped you get some word out about the book just in the show here. But definitely – yeah, get out there and get on as much as you can because, this is a book one. So you're going to be able to really introduce people to a, series. And hopefully, if you set a good foundation for a first book, then you'll have a receptive and waiting audience for book two. So, this one's you got to have to get out there and and shake the rafters a little bit.
Oh, I'm going to be doing everything I can. Don't worry.
All right. And we're coming up here about, we got about a little over 10 minutes left in the show. before we, one thing we always like to do on the show is give people a chance to know where to connect with you as far as websites or Amazon pages, any place online you want people to either follow you or connect with you, go ahead and feel free to give that info out.
Of course. So my website is mekebstories.com, M-E-K-E-B-E, stories. I post some book reviews there, and I also, updates on what I'm doing and how things are going and book updates and essentially, like, everything happening with the latest thing or what I'm up to or how things are progressing. I'm working on an email list now trying to get that stuff figured out. Tim Dempsey author on Instagram and post a lot of stuff there relating to the book. One of the things I'm doing now, which is I'm trying to post pictures I've taken as they look like the different locations in Fallendale. And I've been taking tons of pictures of the actual book when things come out. I also post stuff about like the new D&D book. Like one came out called Space Bands, Treasury of Dragons, and that thing's actually insane. So I was talking about that on Minds.com. I'm it's a McKeeb sequence, so, you know, M-E-K-E-B-E sequence. And then, the picture as of this right now, it's like it's me in a red cloak walking away because I was trying to get a picture of myself looking like the Blute Nobles because they wear red cloaks. I had that left over from my Halloween costume. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to go out into the woods and take my friends and have them take pictures of me in that. So those are the best places to reach me right now.
Well, you're going to get Daniel excited because you're helping to bring back cloaks back into fashion. I know Daniel will definitely support that.
Yeah. It would be so much better if they were.
Right, Daniel? I know you like that.
What was that again now?
Oh, he's bringing cloaks back into fashion. Cloaks.
Yeah.
I know you'd be happy about that.
I took a lot of pictures that day because I'm in the college I'm at. I was part of their paranormal society, and they're like, we need pictures for the Instagram. And I'm like, I'm going to go stand in, like, dark corners in this, and someone's going to send pictures of me standing in cloaks to you. And they're like, okay, cool. And then I went to the woods and took pictures for my Instagram page.
Well, Daniel is bringing everything from the Victorian age back into fashion. So, yeah, I know he can get behind that, too. So,
yeah.
But I will have to find you on Instagram because I wasn't aware about you. I will have to give you a follow as soon as I get off the show because I have not – I did not know you had an Instagram page for your author self. So I will definitely connect with you there. And Daniel's on there, too. And Daniel's at Gentleman's Cigar on Instagram. And Matt, are you an Instagrammer? I can't remember.
Yeah, I have an Instagram account, but it is it's more dormant than most volcanoes. I've had it for about 4 years. I've had it for 4 years. I think I've made 2 posts in that time. Although I think this year I may be a little more active. But yeah, no, I'm more of a Twitter and a Facebook guy.
I see you on Twitter a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not much.
But go ahead and give those out, Matt, while you're at it, because, yeah, your handles.
Yeah, my Twitter handle is at mlation, L-E-Y-S-H-O-N, auth, A-U-T-H. Or just search for Matt Lation. It should bring me up. I'm sitting on a Dali-esque park bench. And Facebook, Matt with 2 T's, Lation. And I think most of the people that listen to the show, I'm either friends with or see on Facebook. So. Twitter I'm on a lot more these days. But I need to try and bring Instagram into the fold at some point for sure.
And once you follow Matt,
I wouldn't bother people with my Instagram right now.
But Timothy, once you follow Matt online, you instantly become a member of the Lation Nation. So yeah, you'll have to connect with Matt on those.
And Timothy, that is entirely Steve's creation. His nomenclature, not mine. Not saying I don't love it, but
poor Matt has to listen to me mention that every time he's on the Star Chamber show. But I love it though; it's too good.
I'll find it right now.
I love it.
I'll
follow
it with every account I have. What's it called?
Yeah.
What's the Instagram?
What's that?
What's the Instagram name? I'll follow of everything I have right now.
Let me dust off the Instagram. Oh shit! There's some moths flying away from it. My Instagram is Matt again. 2 T's. Lation Auth. A-U-T-H, the number 9. I'm sorry, for some reason, Steve, last few times I tried to log into the show, it's saying that my account's disabled. Like, I can't even do a password reset or anything. Yeah, so
weird.
I'll try and create a new account for the next time I'm on there. But, yeah, it's 2 posts.
Okay.
I've got 101 very disappointed followers right now, I'm sure. But, but yeah. Matt Lation, Auth 9.
And I have 2 more things to add in that are they're newer, so I forgot. Tim Dempsey, author on YouTube. You can find the Dispatch Hunter series, and
the YouTube channel.
I don't know what's happening past the Dispatch Hunter series, so you can at least find that on there. And you could find that I think also on Dyson Effect, Dyson and Effect, not the vacuum cleaner. I know it sounds like that. On Spotify, you can find them there too, and I'm pretty sure on YouTube, it's also called Dyson Effect.
Nice, nice. That's a cool name. Good play on words there too. That's awesome, man. Oh yeah, but I'm gonna have to make sure now I tag Matt on everything I do on Instagram, just so he has some activity coming in on his notifications for Instagram.
Make me feel needed on another platform. Thank you so much.
You feel wanted.
You'll feel
wanted on Instagram. That's cool.
Yeah, I'll log in. I'll log in next week and see like 68 new notifications.
Right. And then what's going to happen, Timothy, is Matt's going to become a TikTok maniac by the following week.
Oh, God, no. Some rabbit holes you just try and stay away from, but I feel a gravitational pull, but currently I ain't. Avoid TikTok. But...
No, it's a tractor beam. I watch friends of mine. Yeah. Oh, that's too good. Oh, man. Well, we're coming up on just a couple more minutes in the go ahead, Matt.
No, that's all right, Matt. The only thing I know about TikTok is that Jack Black is the coolest thing on it, and we're all competing for second. Anyway.
Right. Tenacious D. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's too good. I'm going to have to watch that movie, last feature film they did, because it has a cameo from one of my favorite metal singers of all time, Ronnie James Dio. Yeah, it's classic. I got to watch that again. So thank you, Matt. You just gave me an idea. but anyway, I'm coming down to about 3 minutes left. So, Timothy, is there anything that we did not cover as far as tonight that you wanted to make sure you get out to our audience?
I can't really think of anything else. I think I covered all the bases.
Good. We aim to please. We definitely do. And kind of like as you can see with Matt, you know, once you've been on the show, it's going to be like a tractor beam. And, you know, you're going to want to just come back again and again, even the co-host.
I'm definitely up for it.
we won't put you on the hot seat too right away. We'll give you time to adjust a little bit, but thank you very much. It's been great having you on the show. I'll give you the final word, and then I'll let Matt say a little goodbye, and then Daniel can take us out to wrap up. But yeah, next week Wednesday 9 o'clock p.m. EST, we will have another great featured guest coming for you, the Star Chamber Show. Thank you, Timothy, and if you have any final words, then Matt and Daniel, take us out.
So remember, if you like vampires, action, and tons of weird magic, Wilting Blood Red Revival releases on February 11th, and I guarantee you it will please.
Good book. I'll say, definitely.